the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard our Friday edition with Mayor Michael Bloomberg of the John Gambling Show. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
I expected you to be in Ireland today. I see you have your green tie on.
I do have a green tie, but that had nothing to do with the fact that I ate at Donovan's Pub last night or was supposed to be in Ireland today. Just happened to be
your green tie today. Okay, yeah. Whoever dresses you picked out the green tie.
But I just thought to be away, given there's a heat wave. Hopefully, nothing else will happen. But
pretty wild storms last night.
There were some wild storms last night, and I will go in the next two or three weeks, because I had promised to dedicate a memorial to the Fighting 69th, and we had a police officer and firefighter who had been in the 69th, and were going to come with me, and a pub owner, Jimmy Neary, who owns an Irish pub and comes from very near Sligo, where this is, and has been a friend of mine for many, many years. So we were going to go, and but we'll postpone it, and we'll do it in a few weeks.
All right. The fact that you postponed the trip because of the heat wave that we're supposed to have this weekend, is that an indication that you're not as confident in the electrical system and grid as maybe we should be?
Well, the overhead network, you know, anytime there's a storm, cables are going to come down. I mean, the difference between the overhead network and the underground network, the overhead network goes out many times, but it can be repaired very quickly. And the underground network doesn't go out very often, but when it does, it takes an awful long time to work underground and to pull out the old cables and put in new ones. And Con Ed strung cables on the street. They now have to go back and put them underground, but it just takes so long to do that. So, you know, there's no free lunch. Which would you rather have? I don't know the right answer.
All right. Let's talk about you and I talked about this early in the summertime, right, about the supply situation
here
in New
York. There's two things.
City.
Keep in mind, Con Ed is not a supply company.
I understand.
They don't generate electricity. Keyspan now owns a lot of these plants. Others do. They distribute electricity.
New York State Power Supply.
There's three parts of this problem, I suppose. We need new, more efficient, less polluting plants in this city. We need more transmission lines from upstate, where a lot of the power comes from Canada, and upstate New York, it's hydro, to bring down. That's controversial as well. And then the distribution network, like any utility, it gets old and constantly needs replacement. And kind of it's in the middle of a $3.5 billion renovation that they started in March of 2005. But there's still, you know, a lot of these network stuff's been under the ground for 20, 30 years.
So you nobody seems to address those bigger issues, the supply and the high tension.
Well, they do.
Wants it built in their backyard.
Well, nobody wants it built in their backyard, and nobody wants to pay for it. But I'll give you some examples of things we're doing. The water tunnel. Yeah, we live in a society where you can't go without electricity. We have always lived in a society where you can't go without water. God forbid one of the two water tunnels would collapse. We don't have any backup. So, 20, 30 years ago, they started building a third water tunnel. And even during the financial problems we had when I came into office, I made sure we kept funding the construction of the third water tunnel, because that'll take another 10, 15 years before that's done. But God forbid you have a problem, you have to have backup on your infrastructure. Phone system. We live in a world where it'd be pretty difficult to go without telephones. I mean, we don't remember that there used to be a world where they didn't have telephones. Today, not only does everybody have a telephone. Everybody has a cell phone, sure.
Except those kids in school.
I can't tell you the number of press conferences where the reporters that write how phones aren't disruptive, their cell phones go off in the middle of the press conference and they look embarrassed. But anyways, what do you do if the telephone network goes down? In telephones, the good news is, and what wasn't true 20 years ago, today there's competition. There's more than one telephone company. So if one telephone company loses its network, the others are still functioning, because you don't have to string wires underground anymore. You do it with cell towers. So that gives us some backup. Television. Television gets distributed by cable, but there is satellite.
Over the air, too.
Still over the air, although big buildings in the city sometimes make that a little more problematic. Electricity, we don't have any second source. That's just a fact of life, and I don't know of any technology on the horizon that would let us get electricity any other ways other than through cables under the street. Now, way down the road, you can say, well, maybe fuel cell technology or solar so that buildings can have enough, collect enough electricity from the sun or generate enough with a clean, non-polluting fuel cell so that they're not dependent on a network coming into their building. But the cost of putting a second network in is just so prohibitive it never happened.
All right, this blackout.
So we're stuck with one energy supplier or one energy distributor, and that's Con Ed.
I remember when we had the blackout in August, what, two years ago,
yep.
I think it was, and I remember discussing this with you and Governor Pataki. The inconvenience and safety issues of a blackout are enormous, but think of the security issue when we talk about terrorism, how easily affected we are.
Well, I think it'd be hard for somebody to take down the network. If you were going to do it, you'd probably take a computer and try to hack into the control system. If you remember the blackout, people say, well, the whole city was blackout and it came out within 24 hours. How come this one area took a week to come back? It's a very different thing. When the computers that run the distribution network 2 years ago at the blackout time sensed that there was going to be a problem and sensed that there could be damage done to the network, the computers shut off the network.
There are arguments that Con Ed should have done that, too, because they saw their network starting to fail as well.
This time. Let's go back to the other time. Computers know it's going to be a problem, did it. And so there was no damage. It took them 24 hours to bring it up slowly so you don't have surges and all that sort of stuff, and they could monitor it and all the technical gobbledygook. But the bottom line is there was no damage to the network, and they brought it back once the power from upstate Canada or Ohio, wherever it was coming from, is fixed. This time, they had a network. They knew they had problems because the feeders into it were starting to blow, and once one burns out, all of the others have to pick up that capacity. That's why you have multiple. But now, all of a sudden, if you lose a second one, everything else has two to pick up, and you lose a third, and so they get more and more vulnerable with time. What the city did, and Con Ed called us right away, we took Rikers Island, which is a big user, off.
Subway slowed down?
I don't know if the subway slowed down. The MTA might have used less power. But the city took Rikers Island off and brought it up on backup generators. We took a sewage treatment plant off, brought it up on generators. And there were a number of other things that the city did to reduce its consumption to try to help out Con Ed. Con Ed had to make a decision. If they took the network down, it would have been 500,000 people. But they probably thought, I don't know, I'm not an engineer that was working there, they thought they could get through this. You do have problems all the time. And then once all of a sudden it got so bad, it turned out it did a lot of damage. And so when they tried to bring it back up, every time they opened a manhole, they found something else burnt out. And that's what took so long to get it all back.
In the meantime,
the city, incidentally, did a great job. And people should really congratulate the Office of Emergency Management that coordinated by police and fire and the senior, Department for the Aging, and who's incidentally opening cooling centers this weekend, too. So if anybody needs a cooling center, call 311 throughout the city, and you can find out where the local cooling center is. And some of them are in senior centers, and there are some other places that will open. But it's there's no easy answers.
You took it pretty good this week. I mean, everybody and his brother was after you for supporting Kevin Burke and Con Edison, and I know you were perturbed about it.
Well, look. Number one, I've got to do what's right, not what's politically correct. I think taking cheap shots at people is disgraceful. My objective was to get help Con Ed get the power back up. There's plenty of time afterwards to look and see why we found ourselves in that situation. But the men and women of Con Ed, from the top to the bottom, you know, they worked 12, 14, 16-hour shifts. I was really annoyed. One TV station took a picture of two guys sitting in an air-conditioned Con Ed truck and said, oh, nobody's working. Well, for all I know, those guys work 36 straight hours and were taking a 10-minute break so that they didn't pass out. I think the men and women at Con Ed deserve a lot of credit. You had a situation. Why we're there is a separate issue. We can come back and look at it later. This city tries to do everything it can to help Con Ed get its network back up and to take care of the population of the city in the meantime. And I can tell you, in this area, crime went down. Calls to 911 were down 40%. Number of ambulance runs was down. Number of fires was down. People cooperated. The sanitation department picked up all the trash as people threw away food that was spoiling. We've worked with Con Ed, and we're applying for making sure people can get loans and that sort of thing so that they can recover from this. We visited virtually every business in the affected area to see what we can do. And some actually did pretty well. Some stores and restaurants did have power, and they, you know, some, there's some winners and losers all the time.
State wants to do investigation.
Well,
now,
I think the
oversight.
State should. It's the Public Service Commission oversees Con Ed. Con Ed is a regulated business. They can't raise their rates at will. They have to apply for a rate increase. There are regulations they have to follow. And Con Ed should be an outsider should look at it. And some people say, oh, the Public Service Commission won't do a good job. Well, I don't know, but that's the agency we have. If you'd thought that, you should have gone and changed the Public Service Commission. They're who we have. And incidentally, I've talked to the head of it. We're going to have city representatives there. And during this whole thing, Con Ed had – we had our people at the Con Ed command center from the beginning of this problem through the entire time, 24 hours a day. So we watched what they did. We were fully informed, and they did their thing, and we took care of everybody in the city to the extent we could. It was frustrating. It was annoying. People get perturbed, and they should. But that doesn't mean that everybody wasn't trying to do their best, and the people who were perturbed incidentally did do what was right. They helped each other, and they cooperated, and we have a lot to be proud of. Sad that it happened.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I don't like to be beaten up any more than anybody else does, nor I'm sure it is anybody else. But, you know, you got to do what's right. And the yelling and screaming and calling people names and accusing them of criminal behavior is just an outrage.
All right, let's take a break, Mr. Mayor. We'll come right back at 77 WABC. We continue on our Friday get-together here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Terrible story in the news this week. In fact, her body was just found yesterday. Jennifer Moore from Harrington Park, New Jersey. She and a girlfriend here in New York City, 18 years old, underage, get into a bar, get absolutely fallen down drunk. And the one ended up in the hospital with alcohol poisoning. This poor young lady found murdered by an ex-con. And thrown in a dumpster. Underage drinking is an enormous problem.
First, you got to have the prayer for her and her parents, family. I mean, you can't imagine.
Incomprehensible.
I think that is a good way to describe it. You know, lessons.
This wouldn't have happened if they weren't drunk.
That's probably true. If you are a little bit tipsy, don't leave your friends. Stay together. There's strength together. Apparently, they had their car towed. They went to the tow pound. The tow pound did what was right. They refused to give them the car because they were obviously intoxicated, if the reports that I got are correct. And one fell down, and they called an ambulance. I guess they did what they could do. And then for some inexplicable reason, this young lady left the tow pound and started walking on the street. And then nobody knows what happened. We just know how it ended. Very tragic. You know, underage drinking is a very big problem. And whether she was underage or, you know, if she was 21, it wouldn't have made it any better.
That's true.
One less thing to describe it, but still would have been.
I mean, I know the police and the people that hand out the alcohol licenses for clubs and restaurants here in New York City try and do as good a job as they can in policing this.
The trouble is, you know, it's the same problem as with immigrants. Buying documentation that is false is. Everybody can do it anytime for next to nothing. So a lot of kids who are underage carry documentation that say they're over 21. And, you know, the bar owner, I don't suggest for a second that they shouldn't do everything they can, but there is a limit to how much you can check. And you got to look, if the kid looks very young, Do you then go and say no if their documentation says yes? I mean, I suppose you could be sued for, you know, discrimination. What do you mean? I look young. Here's the numbers. This is a tragedy, and I don't know what you say.
Tragic consequence about binge drinking today. Which, I mean, this is not something, I guess, that's directly under your purview. But it is for parents that have teenagers. I've gone through it. My kids are now all legal. They're over 21. But everybody goes through it, and it is your worst nightmare. Of your child getting in trouble because of their
drink. Generally, it centers around you worry about them drinking and getting into a car.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, and you read about these. Yeah, this gets a lot of publicity, but there's, you know, it seems like almost every day you see in the paper a story about a horrendous crash, 3 or 4 kids on their way home from a party plow into a tree going much too fast. And, you know, it just, and the sad thing is, of course, it could all be prevented. I mean, some things you sit there and you say, well, medicine isn't up to that level, or just, you know, a meteor falls out of the sky. Nothing you could do about it. A lot of this stuff, you could do something about it if people would, if we help each other. And, you know, part of it's education, although there's no reason to think this young lady didn't have a good education.
I'm sure she knew all the problems with alcohol. I mean, I'm sure she understood that.
But understanding, when you're an adolescent, even when you're an adult, understanding True. And really taking it to heart are different things. For adolescents, there really is a much bigger gap. Yes, they went through the course that said drinking and driving don't mix, but that doesn't – you had a few drinks and your friends are there and you just don't think about it, or you have to prove that you're immortal. Particularly at that age, everybody thinks they are. I guess we adults do too.
Yesterday you signed, I know you've been talking about safety, you have been adamant about gun safety, and yesterday you signed another bill that holds people to the feet of the fire.
Four different bills. One has creates a gun offender registry so that if you get convicted of having an illegal gun, second or third degree, then you have to register with the police department and report every 6 months. It's the same thing as Megan's Law for sex offenders and that sort of thing, which I gather works. I mean, I was a little bit skeptical, but when I really looked at the numbers, if you have to register, the fact that people know they're being watched, even if it is only every 6 months.
Would that registry be public information?
I don't have any idea.
Okay.
Don't know, but I can tell you this.
Because the Megan's Law, the sex offenders, is public information.
Maybe this is. Gun offenders really are more likely to be rearrested, and so this really would make a difference. Another one would require gun dealers to take a physical audit of their inventories twice a year and report to the police department. Apparently, what happens with unscrupulous gun dealers, and it's probably only a very small percentage of the gun dealers, but they say, oh, guns were stolen. And in fact, what they did is they sold them without the documentation of who bought them. So we're trying to stop that. Another one would limit the handgun the purchases in the city. These are the city dealers only. We can't do anything about out of state, or out of the city, although we're trying to one gun every 90 days. Now, I don't know how many guns you need. Why one gun every 90 days is such an impediment. At least it slows down the number of guns you can buy and resell. But you can't be using them yourself. I mean, every 3 months you buy another gun. What happened to the last one? The fourth one is really sick. People have illegal guns, and they paint them colors to look like a child's gun.
Like a toy gun.
Like a squirt gun. Exactly right. Now, you're a cop, and you want to go home to your family at the end of the shift, and some kid pulls out a gun, and it looks like a toy gun. What do you do?
And you have to make that what-do-you-do decision instantaneously.
Instantaneously, when the adrenaline's starting to flow, and there's noise, and it's dark, and there's people. I mean, what do you do? You got to have it. That's why, you know, police earn their living. Let me tell you.
So this law would make what painting
it
a
makes
gun
it illegal? Yeah.
That if you do that and you're caught, then there's extra.
Yeah.
Extra bad stuff.
It actually bans the use and sale of these colorization kits, or coloration kits, I guess is the word. But, you know, think of the sick people that do that, and the poor cop who's got to make that decision, and you know how sympathetic we'll be if he makes the wrong decision.
Not very. Yeah.
That's unfortunately in the headlines. Okay. Everybody will say, oh, he should have waited another second to ascertain. You don't have that. There's actually, the police have put people through these simulators where you have a toy gun in your hand and they flash pictures and people jump out and you got to make a decision to shoot or not. And everybody, no matter how much you criticize the police, they go through it. Everybody pulls the trigger all the time. They blow away innocent people in the simulation.
Because you just don't know. It's either it's them or me.
Now we do pay our police officers to run risks, but they reasonable risks. And anyways, will these four laws make a difference? They'll help. There was in Virginia, they indicted a bunch of people for selling illegal guns. That was good. I was thrilled about that. We've worked very hard in some other states to try to get a number of these states to enforce the laws. I talked to the governor of Connecticut yesterday about guns. They're trying to do some things there. Every big city in this country has the same problem. And
Mayor Street of Philadelphia yesterday held a press conference. They've had a lot of murders up and gun violence, and he said enough is enough. And he's
30,000 people in America each year get killed with guns. Nobody's trying to take away your right to own a weapon. Nobody's trying to take away your right to hunt, but we're not taking away rights of asking that states enforce laws about who can buy guns, and nobody wants to sell guns to kids or guns to known criminals. This is craziness. And, unfortunately, one lobby group seems to have rolled Congress, and we're still fighting to keep the gun laws from being weakened further by Congress. I don't know how successful we're going to be. If they don't get it one way, they're trying to attach it to the appropriations bill, which everybody's going to vote for because everybody needs the money.
Everybody
so there's all these
the
Christmas
stuff.
Tree of things attached to it, one of which is give criminals the right to have guns, because that's really what they're doing. They take away the police's ability to take guns away from the bad guys. Can you imagine Congress votes to protect the bad guys and jeopardize the lives of the people that they are supposed to represent? And anybody that can, Congress says that's not the case. That's exactly the choice that they have to make. And people, if somebody gets killed in one of these cities, somebody should call up the local congressman, local senator, and say, you voted for that. You're the one that did it. As you were complicit in this because we could have stopped it, or we might have been able to stop it. It's a scourge of our society.
We've got more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment at 77 WABC. We've passed our half-hour mark. That means we're a little late with George Weber. George?
All right, John. We've got 79 degrees right now. Sunshine. Here are the stories you'll be talking about all day from News Talk Radio 77 WABC. A night out in Manhattan ended in tragedy when a New Jersey teen was found dead in a trash bin after authorities say she was strangled by a drifter in a cheap motel. The body of 18-year-old Jennifer Moore of Harrington Park, New Jersey, found early yesterday. 35-year-old Draymond Coleman of New York City charged with her murder. It's believed that she wandered away from a night of drinking picked up by this guy. United Nations has removed unarmed observers from their posts along the Israeli-Lebanese border. A UN spokesman says the observers are being moved in with the peacekeeping forces in the area. The decision came after an Israeli airstrike destroyed one post this week, killing four people. The state has pulled the plug, at least for now, on a company's proposal to build a 200-mile-long high-voltage power line from the western Mohawk Valley to the lower Hudson Valley. The Public Service Commission has told officials at New York Regional Interconnect that the agency can't schedule a required public hearing on the project until the Albany-based company's application complies with several requirements. All eyes watching the weather, 90 degree plus, maybe some severe thunderstorms. This is not good as the region, New York City specifically, recovers from a number of power outages. The son of society icon Brooke Astor denying claims that he has neglected his 104-year-old mother by penny-pinching on her health care and letting her live in squalor. Anthony Marshall, in a statement yesterday, said he loves his mother. And finally, John, you might think it's the Wild West with deputies on horseback, but Sarasota, Florida law enforcement officials say their mounted police are doing a great job rounding up speeders. Believe it or not, the mounted officers have radar on their horses.
Here's a one for you, Mr. Mayor. Put radar on horses.
And find it easy to pull over lead-footed motorists. Most of the time, they stick to neighborhoods where the 30-mile-an-hour speed limit needs enforcing. One mounted cop says horseback is a great way to bust drug users because they can smell more since they're not confined to a patrol car.
And that's okay. There you go. Down in Sarasota, another option. Maybe our NYP horse detail will be doing that shortly.
Finding a place to keep the horses is a problem. We're working on that.
I'm sure it is. Mr. Mayor, stick where you are. Let me go to Ray Huff and find out what's happening down on Wall Street. Ray? All right, John Gambling here with you at 77 WABC, along with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good news, record surplus I was reading in the newspaper for the city.
The finances of the city are in good shape. We've got problems down the road, and we're trying to save some money so we can pay our bills later on. But we've managed to get tax revenues higher than what we had thought, and most of it comes from a greater number of real estate transactions, which we tax, and you get more money than we count on, and some of it from an increase in property values. Remember, an awful lot of commercial property values and some residential have doubled in the last 4-odd years because the city's safer, crime's down, schools are getting better, parks, culturals, people are moving into the city, and they raise prices and property taxes go with that. That's the good news. The bad news is that if you look nationally, there's lots of stories about the housing market starting to slow, so maybe we're not going to have those revenues down the road, but I can tell you the expenses we have today, we're certainly going to have down the road.
To that point, you appeared before the Financial Review Board, yep, which you do on an annual, on an annual basis, and you said that one of the things the city has to do to obviously address all of this is with the contracts with city unions is, again, more productivity. Are you concerned that there's not enough, or is there never enough productivity gains in contractual
situations? Well, I mean, your employees, what you ask for them to do is to be honest, work hard, be flexible. And then that's what you ask from them. What they ask from us is to let them lead the share in the great American dream and get paid more. Get paid more in cash now and get paid more by having a bigger pension and medical benefits down the road. For city workers, if you're in the uniform services, police, fire, sanitation or corrections, 50% of your compensation is in deferred benefits, pensions, and medical benefits for the rest of your life. Nobody counts that, but that's half of your compensation is there. We've got to constantly find ways to do more with less because the taxpayer isn't going to pay any more. I think that's clear. Public just doesn't want to pay any more taxes, and nobody does. So if you want more services, every time the city council or the administration, or the state legislature votes, or the federal government requires. Every time we've got to provide more services, the money's got to come from someplace. And nobody wants to ever make the either-or decision. It's always, oh, let's do both. And they fudge the numbers, or they sell something and use the money to pay for this year's, and next year we got a bigger. Let somebody else worry about it. So if you look at the city's revenues and expenses. The expenses are basically fixed. They grow with some contracts, but they go up at roughly the rate of inflation, and we've actually held it down to that, including raises for employees. The benefits that we have to pay that the state legislature basically votes, although some of it is also lack of returns from the stock and bond markets, those are going up dramatically. So we have a situation where our expenses are growing. Our revenue is unpredictable. It fluctuates with real estate prices, with economic activity, with the number of tourists coming here. I mean, all of these things. And no company would run that way, but you just can't plan if you don't know how much revenue you're going to get. And we don't know how much revenue we're going to get. Nobody can tell for sure next year. If we predict low, everybody screams. If we predict high and turn out to be wrong, everybody screams. It's just an inexact science. So we've got to constantly work, and I think the biggest problem we're going to have, I looked at the 8 years that I will have in this office. During that time, our expenses will have, that we can control, will have grown right about the level of inflation. We've cut, even with all of the raises that we've given, because we've saved money by cutting $4 billion out of the budget in other areas, and that gets pushed back in by these other things. But the pension and medical benefits and some debt service, a few other things, but mostly pension and medical benefits for this state, for this city, will have gone from, in 8 years, from $13 billion to $25 billion annually. The state legislature keeps voting benefits and the city pays.
in all fairness, the governor, I think, vetoed somewhere around 30 bills that would have raised pensions even higher.
Even higher.
While we're talking about finances, this is a totally different subject, not directly related to the city, but as an entrepreneur, what is your reaction to ExxonMobil's $10.5 billion profit in the second quarter with gasoline prices at $3.20 in many instances? Is that a reasonable – is this something that we should accept? You know, people scream like crazy over this.
Well, I don't know that anybody thinks the government should go in and tell companies they can't maximize their profits. The question, I suppose, is the tax structure – should you have a graduated tax if they make more money and less tax if they don't make more money? Should you have a tax that encourages them to reinvest and plant because we want them to have more capacity? That's in everybody's interest. Tax policy is the ways you basically would try to influence that. I don't know.
Is that something that you think is a good idea?
I don't know anything about energy companies' economics. I'm not sure I understand why they make more money when prices are higher.
I don't either.
Because the cost should go up. The cost of oil goes
proportionate
up.
Because
I think most studies show that their margins don't change. They don't charge more. And you'd think that with higher prices, people would use less so that their revenues would get hurt more, but it doesn't seem to work that way. I just don't know enough about their accounting.
Okay. But you wouldn't be supportive of the government sort of telling a company how much money they could make.
The communists tried that in Russia for a lot of years. You know, it's like, remember Churchill talked about democracy. It's the worst system except for all others. Capitalism's the worst system except for all others. You don't want to. I don't think government should. Government's got a responsibility to protect the public, make sure that things are delivered honestly and with disclosure. Government has a responsibility to levy taxes to pay for services we all need. Government has a responsibility to have a tax policy that encourages economic activity that's in the interest of society and discourage economic activity that's not. For example, there are a lot of programs that encourage oil companies to go out and look for more reserves. Now, whether or not that really influences them or that's just giving somebody who lobbies you, I don't know.
That they would have done anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so there's some of that built in. But listen, tax policy encourages consumption of certain things, discourages consumption of others. For example, taxing cigarettes and liquor discourages the use of cigarettes and liquor, which you can argue not everybody would agree, but let's assume that's what Congress decided and state governments and city governments decided was in the public's interest, encouraging people to do research. You can defer expenses, capitalize your research dollars. That encourages companies to do things that are in everybody's interest. But I don't think, you know, there's a point at which I don't think the government should be involved. And I think any time governments around the world have tried that in history, it has just been a disaster.
We're about 6 weeks away from the start of another school season, another school year. Joel Klein was in Washington this past week, one of many, actually, down trying to address what I sense is a national problem. It has to do with the No Child Left Behind Act, and it has to do with measurement of success of schools. And from what I read, right across the country, most schools are having difficulties reaching the goals that have been set by the No Child Left Behind, and he was asking for, as I understand it, a modification to look at a broader range of things when evaluating the success of a school or an individual.
First problem starts out that this country does not have a high enough birth rate, so we're going to have enough people to support the economy down the road, and the kids aren't getting a good enough education so that they'll be able to have the jobs go down the road. Those are two very big problems. One has to do with immigration, the first one, because the only way is we're going to have enough people to pay Social Security benefits down the road. The other, our school systems throughout this country for a long time have been, maybe forever, I don't know, but certainly in recent times, have just not given the kids the education they're going to need to share in the great American dream. Along comes the federal government trying to help. Okay, great. Except that the country is so different that writing a law that covers every municipality, every school system is probably impossible. There's a law that says, in the No Child Left Behind, you have to have textbooks for every kid in the language that they speak when they show up the first day at school. That makes a lot of sense, except that some of the kids speak languages where there is no written text. There just aren't textbooks, period. So it's a ridiculous example, but that's something to show you can't apply. With special needs. New York has a lot of kids that really have to have extra help. And some kids are just not going to, no matter how much we help them, they're not going to, let's say they're just not going to graduate from college, from high school. It's very tragic. We'll do everything we can to help them, but they're just not going to. Do you count that in your graduation rates and say to a school, you've got to have a graduation rate up to this? You don't want schools to say, we're not going to help those kids. Let's push them out of the school system because they screw up our numbers. You want society to help people. So you got to be very careful that when you set objectives, it doesn't give you a doesn't result in an outcome that was not what you really were looking for. And then the testing is a whole nother problem because every state's tests are different. So when you say this state is better, doing better than that state, for all I know, you're comparing apples to oranges. The tests vary from year to year.
But there's a lot of money behind all of this.
Well,
from child
you know, what Congress fundamentally can do is vote money. I mean, legislators vote.
That's about it. The reason, they're not going to come teach a class.
That's true, but that's true of the legislative branch at state and federal and city government as well. They vote money, and legislators have press conferences and vote money. They don't have to get in there and do it. And that's why executives always get frustrated, whether they're mayors, governors, or the president, I guess. You've got to deliver results, and that's not so easy. You pass a law that says everybody's going to be happy.
Any indication that they're going to modify? No child
well, in all fairness, they do listen and they change. If you lobby enough, you can get some changes. Whether you get enough, I don't know. I mean, I'm not so sure we shouldn't have testing that tests on a comparable basis throughout the country. We all have an interest how good the schools are every place in this country. Then, of course, you get down to this whole problem of what should you teach. And in this day and age, you know, science has, who would have thought science, the one thing that's pure, has become controversial.
So is social studies.
Social studies.
Nobody teaches it anymore.
I remember in school, the textbooks always stopped just before or at the Korean War. They never wanted to address anything after that. The teachers, they just didn't need the aggravation of somebody walking in and screaming at them and, you know, having their careers derailed. So, you know, it's...
Look what time it
the
is.
The world is complex.
We're having a good time talking with one another here. I hope you are on the other side listening to it. Let me take a break. We'll come right back. We'll take a couple of phone calls. It's all next at 77 WABC. All right, a couple more minutes here. Time for you at 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, you want to talk with Carrie in Queens?
Sure.
All right, Carrie, you've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
How are you? Hi. You were just talking about the school systems, and I am a parent of a child who will be entering the universal pre-K system in September. I was just wondering why the budget was not approved for the full day UPK when articles were in the newspaper, principals were told, teachers were hired, parents were informed, and now we're being told that there is no full day program.
Well, number one, Carrie, I think universal pre-K is a great idea. When Joel Klein put out a schedule probably 2 years ago of what we would do if we ever get CFE money. First and foremost, it is universal pre-K. We have expanded some, Carrie. I just don't know the specifics of which program that you're talking about. You know, a lot of this has to do with just money. We spend $15.5 billion on the school system, and if we had more, universal pre-K would be right at the top of the list of the things that we should do. It really does. As long as you follow on with good elementary schools, universal pre-K does seem to really make a difference. It's one of the things you really get great value for your money.
All right, Carrie, thanks for the question.
Victor in Brooklyn.
Victor, you've got the mayor. We don't have a lot of time, so go right to the question.
Yes, hi. I would want to find out if In Europe, they have some type of health plan which includes the citizens of their countries. Would it make sense to adapt some type of European health plan, at least just for New York, regardless of what the federal government wants to do?
Well, it's all a question of money. We have one of those. It's a plan to help our municipal workers and take care of them. We have a health care plan. The city spends a lot of money on it. I think nobody in this country seems to think that, or very few people, think that going to a government-provided, socialized health plan would make any sense. People think that you get better care from the private sector, but who's going to pay for it is always a very big problem here.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we have a time for another
David
one.
David in West Hempstead.
David, what's your question for the mayor? Go, get right to it, okay?
Yes, good morning, Mayor. My office had sent to the office of the mayor about a week ago via FedEx statistics showing how our agency provided evaluations to children ages 0 to 3 in the Bronx, and that we provided services, particularly in the South Bronx, to low-income children, especially in battered women's shelters, that no other agency provided. For example, we would send...
Well, David, we don't have time for this. So what's the question?
The question is, would the mayor kindly respond to the letter that we sent to him?
Well, David, I didn't get the letter personally. You know, we have a big staff that answers. Hopefully they will get back to you. If not, write, you should call. But the bottom line is we change these intervention programs. Those that work are going to get funded, and those that don't work are not going to get funded. And we can't do all of them. We just don't have the money to do everything. But one of the things that's always happened is we keep funding the same programs. Why? Because they got funded last year, and that's not a good reason to do it. You should look at every program every year, and if they're working, give them money, and if they're not, no.
Boy, there's a breath of fresh air. I wish all government would do that, even on the smallest of levels, because it isn't done.
But the screaming when you do it is... I got a lot of people on the steps of City Hall, and you get David and West Hempstead, who I'm sure believes his program's great, and maybe it is, but there may be some that are just better. That's the answer.
Got to run, Mr. Mayor. Going to be a hot weekend. Stay cool.
You too. Save energy, please. Don't run your dishwashers during the day. Turn off the air conditioner when you're not home.
Opinion.